It's Central Time. I'm Keely Boltina in for Rob Ferret, and you're with us here on the Ideas Network. Later in the program, Governor Tony Evers has loosened some of the restrictions of his Safer at Home order, but Republicans and the state's biggest business lobby want to reopen more of the economy. We'll catch up on the options and on the actions in front of the state Supreme Court. First, it's Food Friday. Cooking for ourselves and others can do a lot more than just feed us during tough times. It can give us a sense of stability and togetherness. And even as the current pandemic might limit our options in the kitchen at any given time, we can use what we have to make delicious meals to share with our family and keep our spirits up. Chef, restaurateur, and author Lydia Bastianich has embodied those ideals in decades of cooking. She shares her knowledge of Italian food on public television's Emmy-winning Lydia's Kitchen, running for more than 20 years now. And she's our guest on this week's edition of Food Friday. Lydia, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It sounds like you're spending a lot of time at home, like the rest of us these days, to say stay safe. I do want to ask, how are you and your family holding up?
Yes, I guess I am at home like everybody else. I live with my mother, who's 99, so it's her and I. My daughter lives a block away, so that she's not too far, and we drop off food and we see each other occasionally. But basically, it is, you know, staying at home and kind of trying to in my case, you know, I am grateful almost to be with my mother, who's 99. I really cherish this extra time that I'm having with her.
Yeah, it's extra time, though, in a place where some people might be fearful. Certainly, we don't know a whole lot. Things are uncertain. In times like this, what can cooking do for us beyond giving us something to eat, nourishing our bodies?
Well, you know, food and eating is nurturing. It is life. It's keeping us alive. So it's positive. Eating, cooking, feeding, nurturing, sharing, these are all positive things. Looking forward to life, living forward to living, looking forward to socializing with family, with friends through food. So food is positive at the basis, you know, for every culture, not just, you know, every single culture, food is at the basis. So being in the kitchen, just the smells, the aromas of, you know, for us Italians, the garlic, the tomatoes, and all of the basil, just sets a better mood, sets you positive. You know that life will continue, you know, that life goes on. And it sort of sets you in a stronger mood to accept, to face, and to deal with what today brings. Those time at the table, I know with my mother, you know, starting from breakfast to lunch to then a snack at dinner, those are important times where we sit down, and it's time that we have with ourselves, and it's positive. We are eating because we are alive and because we're going to go on and because we're going to want to be strong. So food is a medium that has always been, you know, at the basis of staying alive, nurturing, and now it's more important than ever that people are getting in the kitchen and are cooking that food.
Yeah, I love that you highlight moments we might breeze past under kind of normal circumstances. And right now we have the opportunity to slow down, to think through the process and to experience it. This time of year, farmers markets are usually really starting up and giving us fresh produce. A lot of those are on hold or limited. What are ingredients that are good that we can fall back on right now?
Well, you know, I think there's you could become a member of a market of a farmers, and they deliver, you know, like a weekly, they deliver weekly a bundle of whatever it's in season. Springtime, now it's still a bit early here, but you know, the favas, the peas, the ramps are coming in, the scallions, all the young onions are in, the fresh salads, the beginning of the salads are in. So you know, all those beautiful green and delicious spring things, you know, spinach is really sweet and coming in. And then, of course, to supplement with that, I would always think of dried legumes. You know, they go good together. Dry beans, dry cheche beans, lentils, dried favas. You know, even though we have fresh favas, dry favas are excellent. And a lot of these dry legumes, different all kinds of lentils, of barley, these can be all bought online. So they, you know, they can be delivered at your home. And then, you know, if you have those lentils, you get some carrots, some good celery. You don't, you know, if that you know, first of the season is not reaching your house yet, you can still make a good base, a good soup with celery, carrots, and some lentils. And, you know, a piece of maybe some smoked pork or a sausage or whatever. But that's a good base. So dried legumes and, you know, if you have access to this spring and fresh mushrooms, that's, you know, I love spring. I love foraging in spring, but we're not going anywhere. We're staying home.
Lydia Bastianich is a chef, restaurateur, author, and an Emmy-winning host of public television show It's Food Friday here on Central Time. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What question do you have about putting together foods that comfort your family? What ingredient is lurking in your pantry that you just don't know how to handle? Join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Lydia, let's talk about your country onion soup. It's one of the dishes that's pretty simple, can be made with things we probably have around the house. Tell us about the country onion soup recipe.
Absolutely. You know, that's one of the spaces where you have lots of onions. And, you know, you saute it slowly, nice and easy, with olive oil. You could put some butter, but olive oil. I like to put in there 2 bay leaves just to give it some flavor. And, you know, you need a substantial amount of onions because that's all basically it is. And if you have some stock, that's when these times are great times to put those chicken bones and all that kind of vegetables, the top of the celeries and the top of the leeks and all of that, and make yourself a good stock. So this onion country soup, saute the onions, put some good stock if you have vegetable or chicken stock. But if you don't have that, water will do. Yes, it won't be as intense in flavor, but it will do. And you let that kind of simmer, you season it with the salt and pepper, and then to finish it, and you don't make it very soupy, you make it a little dense, and then you just take a piece of bread and you put it toasted old bread. This is a good time to use old bread. So I would take this onion soup, and when it's kind of not, the onions are not completely broken, they still have some bite, the flavor is of the soup is good, you put them in little ramekins, and you can make this kind of precious-looking soup with almost nothing. You put on top of this soup a nice slice of country bread, top it maybe a little bit of oil or a little bit of butter, grated cheese, and put the cheese as much as you have all over the soup and everything, and you put it in the oven to bake. And when the soup is perking, of course, and the cheese and all that gets crusty on top, you serve it, and it's a meal in itself. A nice, good glass of red wine, and you're okay.
The photo of it is stunning. We do have that recipe posted on our website. You can find that at wpr.org/FoodFriday. You know, some things are in the stores at times and out of the stores at times, but we have seen quite a bit of meat still in stores. And I have to tell you, about 20 years ago, my uncle caught an episode of your PBS show. At that point, he was convinced that Italian food was all pasta and pizza, and that's it. And he noticed you cooking this giant hunk of meat with roasted peppers and onions, and that really was a turning point, I think, for him with Italian cooking and meat. What kinds of meat should we be looking for that maybe we can use in different ways or we can really find some comfort in right now?
Well, I think, you know, long cooking techniques, I love those long cooking techniques, and they are really ideal for now being at home. And in most of the cases, you use a secondary cut of meat. You don't use the prime steak or the shell steak or whatever. You use like the ribeye, the round chuck meat, pieces of beef, but pork is a great. The ribs, making a sauce, you know, cooking a sauce with tomatoes, onion, tomatoes, and pork ribs makes a great sauce. You dress pasta, but you have all those ribs that fall off the bone, where they're delicious. Chicken also, you know, in different parts of chicken, you know, not just the chicken breast. Get chicken legs. Get chicken thighs. They're cheaper. They're better. I like to buy the whole chicken, and what I do is that I take the breast away, and if you buy like two chickens or three chickens, you get six breasts that you put away. Then you have six legs. So you have, if you have a family of six, you have one meal with the breast. You have another meal with all the legs. So the breast you can do with mushrooms and wine and whatever. The legs you can do a la cacciatore with peppers, onions, tomatoes, and mushrooms, and a little bit of rice next to it. And then I take the carcasses and I make this big pot of soup. All the carcasses of that chicken that you took off the breast and all of that, you put in a big pot some onions, celery, carrots, leeks, whatever you have. I put some garlic in there. I put some pepper, whole pepper.
You mean like the whole, like whole black peppercorns you could toss in?
Yeah, peppercorns, okay. And all of that. And you know what I do? I save the cheese rinds from grana or from parmigiano. You know, you grind the cheese, mm-hmm. You ground it, grate the cheese, and then the rinds, you wash them, and then you put them in the soup, and it makes a delicious soup. So you have here a big pot of soup that's going to give you three meals in itself, and then you have the chicken breast, you have another meal. Then you have the chicken legs is another meal. So, you know, it's work that way. Sometimes I buy also chicken wings to make soup. If I, you know, okay, I'm not going to debone the chicken, all that. Buy chicken wings. They're not expensive, and they make a great soup. So, you know, look for the secondary cuts of meat. And do the long cooking technique, whether it's braising, whether it's roasting, you know, because if the meat is a secondary meat, usually secondary cut, usually it's a little tougher, so it needs a longer cooking time. But I love to do those cooking times.
We're talking with chef and author Lydia Bastianich about the emotional value of cooking and some simple Italian meals that we can put together with ingredients in our pantry. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Has cooking and sharing food with others helped you out during this past month or two? What do you think cooking does for us in these tough times? Share your story with us. Call 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. This conversation continues here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. Right now, we are talking with Lydia Bastianich, a chef and host of Lydia's Kitchen on public television. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Let us know what you've been making in your kitchen. And maybe you have a question for Lydia about getting an Italian dish just right. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. And Jeff from Evansville is ready to join the conversation. Hey, Jeff.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks. What do you have today?
Oh, Lydia, I'm in my garden right now. I've got a little patch of fresh, beautiful, young, tender, stinging nettle.
Oh, my God, Jeff. Thank you. That's great. What are you going to do with it?
So I'm going to just take the tips.
Yeah.
And I'm going to wash them real good, and then I'm going to take a little olive oil and some onion and some garlic, and I'm going to stir fry them, and then I'm going to finish them off with a little balsamic vinegar from Modena that we got the last time we were there.
All right.
And if I have any left over, I'm going to squeeze it out and either put it in an omelet. It's also beautiful on a pizza.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that, Jeff.
That's
and
exciting. You know, you can make a risotto with it. You know, you kind of chop it very fine. It makes a great risotto. You can put it in a soup. You can make a great soup, some onions and leeks and nettles, and makes a great soup. Also, in making gnocchis, you know, the gnocchis, you chop the you put it actually in a processor, and with that you make nettles gnocchi. So there's many things, and if you have extra, you can collect it, blanch it, and freeze it, and then you can use it, you know, in days to come. Good luck.
Fascinating with those stinging nettles. Thanks so much for that, Jeff, for calling us at 800-642-1234 on this Food Friday. We also have Gail in Watertown. Hey, Gail.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I cooked a whole bunch of chicken breasts in the crock pot for 8 hours, and they didn't have moisture. It was all at the bottom. And they are so dry. What can I do with them?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, chicken breasts, you know, you got to do quick cooking. The more you cook it, the tougher it gets. I think, you know, you can if you have a good soup, you can shred it, cut it small, shred it, and incorporate it into a soup. So you have a good base chicken soup, you shred the chicken, and in it put some of the carrots that you have from making the soup, or put some spinach leaves in the last minute, and let it cook together. And so you have this soupy chicken, spinach, carrot soup. The other way to do it is, you know, to make it into a salad with some, you have to moisten it up with some mayo or something like that. Chicken breast, you know, doesn't cook long. That's the one thing, you know, about chicken breast. It gets tougher. The more you cook it, the tougher it gets.
So about how long, Gail said about 8 hours she left it on, but how long, if you are trying to cook chicken slowly in something like a crock pot, would you want those chicken breasts to cook?
Well, crock pot is not ideal for chicken breasts. I would do chicken legs. You know, I wouldn't do a chicken breast is in a pan, sauteed quick. You can make it cook in a sauce, you know, like a pizzaiola sauce. And even if you do that, what you do with chicken breast, you sear them first, and then you take them out of the pot, and then you make your sauce, whether you want some onions, some tomatoes, some peppers, some mushroom, and you let the sauce cook, and then you reintroduce the chicken breast and let it finish cooking in there. But you don't overcook the chicken breast.
All right. Hopefully that helps Gail a little bit in determining what to do with what she's got. Lydia Bastianich is a chef, restaurateur, author, and a television host. It's Food Friday here on Central Time, and we are answering some of your questions at 800-642-1234. We are also talking about some of Lydia's recipes, including crepes with chocolate and walnuts. Lydia, what you've said about this is when you find flour in your pantry, make crepes. I love that. It's declarative.
Yes.
Do this.
Yes, it's easy. So crepes could be either a basis for a savory dish or a sweet dish. If you go in the sweet way, crepes are flour, some eggs, some melted butter, water, sugar, a little bit of sugar, salt, and a grated lemon if you go in the sweet route. But either way, if you go in the savory, just omit the sugar. So if you have them sweet, you make these crepes, you make them very thin, you fry them in a nonstick pan is the best, with just a little bit of brush it, a little butter, and make them very thin, and on both sides, nice and not crisp, but, you know, that they're on both sides, and then you spread them with melted chocolate or with jam, and you got yourself a delicious. I used to eat them when I was a kid all the time. If you want to do it savory, you make these crepes and you pile them up, and then you use them like pasta to make a lasagna. Instead of making pasta or boiling pasta, whatever, you use these crepes between your layers of cheese and ricotta and bolognese sauce. However you make your lasagna, you can make these with the crepes. Also, you can make like manicotti. You know, you take the crepe and you stuff it with ricotta, with some cheese, with some spinach, and you roll it like a long candle, and then you bake it like that next to each other. So it's like a manicotti. So crepe can be interchanged for pasta or turn into a dessert. Very versatile.
Some recipes feel like they go on for pages and pages. Yours really capitalize on a handful of simple ingredients. That doesn't seem to be a bad thing when it comes to how you recommend we treat food.
Well, no, I think that, but that's, you know, the Italian cooking is very simple. You have primary ingredients, good ones, the best you can get, four or five, you know, if a recipe has 10, 12 ingredients. You know, some of them do, of course, braisings. But look for the short, especially if you're kind of skeptical, okay, am I going to cook, am I not? Look for the short recipes and follow them thoroughly, read them, and, you know, they work. Simplicity is best in Italian cuisine, certainly.
And we should talk about one more recipe quick before we have to let you go, and that is spaghetti that you have with cheese and pepper. How does this one come together? Why is it special?
Cacio e pepe. Cacio e pepe is a very Roman dish. And do you know that tomatoes, of course, came to Italy after the discovery of the New World? So this pasta dish was way before the Romans, and they did it. They had sheep herders, so they had a lot of sheep around there, and of course sheep's cheese milk, pecorino romano, and the pasta, and so, you know, it was simple. You cooked the pasta, grated some great cheese, and when the pasta was cooked, still a little bit wet, you whisk the cheese in the pasta, in the wet pasta, until almost it formed a sauce. And then you put an abundant amount of black pepper, freshly ground, but coarsely ground. And this is cacio e pepe. This is what it's all about. The herdsmen used to make that all the time. You know, this is, you know, they had the cheese.
Right.
They brought some pasta. And where they're out in the mountains with their herds, that's what they made.
Thank you so much. Lydia Bastianich is a chef restaurateur, author, and Emmy-winning host of Lydia's Kitchen on public television, and she was with us for Food Friday. You can find the recipes that we talked about online at WPR.org/Food Friday. Thanks for being with us on Central Time. It's the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Keely Boltina in for Rob Ferret. A new survey shows that while 75% of Americans say sun protection is an important daily habit, only 40% say they practice that regularly while outdoors. Coming up, we'll talk about how we can play it safe under the sun, how to spot potential skin cancer, and the treatment options available for patients. First, a public hearing at the state capitol yesterday, organized by Republicans and the state's largest business lobby, addressed a proposal to reopen the state's economy sooner than May 26th. That's the date currently in place under Governor Tony Evers' extended Safer at Home order. It's the latest pushback to the governor's Badger Bounce Back plan, even as he announced some new flexibility for businesses in just the last week. And last Tuesday, Republican leaders asked the state Supreme Court to block Evers' extension of that Safer at Home order. The administration has since asked the court to dismiss that. The court has yet to rule on both decisions. Sean Johnson is the Capitol Bureau Chief for Wisconsin Public Radio News, and he's here to catch us up on everything that's happened. Sean, thanks for being here.
Hey, Keely.
Quite the task ahead of us. In the last week, Governor Evers and the Department of Health Services have made some minor changes to the Safer at Home order. What do we need to know about what's now open?
You know, he has authorized some more businesses to kind of reopen. There's more curbside options for some businesses. You know, golfing is now happening in Wisconsin. He reopened some state parks that he had previously closed, although it's under more restrictions. But I think a lot of the broad strokes of what we've kind of gotten used to as much as we can over the last month plus, you know, schools being closed, dine-in service at restaurants and taverns not happening, you know, a lot of businesses deemed, you know, quote, non-essential being closed, that's still happening under stay-at-home for now.
And state Republican leaders have taken it to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, asking them to reject the administration's extension of Safer at Home. Have the Republicans put out a plan to safely reopen the economy?
They have not, in a formal way, written a bill or, you know, come out with a bill and said this is the Republican plan. But, you know, they have said a lot of nice things and are really kind of promoting a plan by Wisconsin manufacturers and commerce, which would let businesses operate with varying levels of protection once the state reopens. So it's not exactly the Republican plan, but it's getting a little harder to find daylight between what Republicans are saying they want and what WMC is now proposing.
And we did talk about that plan earlier this week from Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce here on Central Time. But remind us broadly what they're proposing. It's a regional kind of strategy.
It is. And, you know, I think, first of all, to compare it to what the governor has proposed, his plan calls for reopening of the state once certain benchmarks are hit for the number of tests administered around the state. And for, you know, a downward trajectory of a positive test as a percent of total tests within a 14-day period. So he's wanting the state to hit those benchmarks first before he starts talking about reopening more. The WMC plan would replace that and essentially start with the idea that we are reopening and how are we going to do it. And so a business that was located in a part of the state that had a smaller number, a county that had a smaller number of COVID-19 cases, and a business that did, you know, something that didn't have a lot of contact with customers, they could operate with fewer protections than a business that operated in a more urban area that has more face-to-face contact with customers, for example. But it's a little loose on exactly what that would mean in terms of what precisely a business would have to do, you know, whether they would have to wear face masks or something like that. It's not exactly that specific.
Sean Johnson is Capitol Bureau Chief for Wisconsin Public Radio. And we're talking about plans from state leaders and stakeholders trying to figure out how and when to reopen business in Wisconsin as we deal with the spread of COVID-19. Sean, there was a public hearing around this WMC plan at the Capitol yesterday. What did that consist of?
So it was not exactly, you know, it wasn't a public hearing in the true sense of that definition. It was invited testimony only. So you had, it was organized by Republican lawmakers, and they invited business groups to talk about this WMC plan. These are groups that like that plan, and it included representatives from businesses who like that plan, who want to see the state reopen quickly. So I mean, you have to kind of give it that context first to see who was testifying. You know, this wasn't a hearing where you had a lot of public health doctors out there talking about what the state should do in terms of reopening. You know, that said, you did hear some, you know, stuff that I haven't heard before exactly from, like, the Wisconsin Restaurant Association and the Tavern League when it comes to reopening. I mean, the Restaurant Association is kind of getting ready for reopening, whether it happens sooner or later. There are some restaurants, at least one, that testified at this hearing who said that he's ordering booze and non-perishable food for potential reopening next week. You know, that's not what's on schedule, but we do have this court case and anything could happen. And then you had taverns offering kind of specific suggestions on what they would be open to in terms of opening back up some portion of their business in exchange for, you know, new restrictions, you know, potentially having outdoor dining or potentially requiring employees to wear masks. They're saying they're open to stuff, but they say that if they just stay closed until May 26, a lot of them are going to go under.
And it sounds like then people who represent the restaurant industry or owners are saying, we understand that we can't just flip a switch, but we have to do something. Is that kind of the takeaway?
Yeah, the Restaurant Association in particular was pretty frank about it. You know, they said that whenever we reopen, it's going to be slow. You know, we're not going to be operating at full capacity or anything close to it. There's going to be a lot of people who don't want to go out, period, because they're going to be worried about COVID-19. So they are saying we can't stay closed until there's a vaccine for this because that could be a year and a half or never. And so they want to open with they've come out with this plan that participating restaurants could implement if they want, where they'd have to, like, sanitize tables and chairs in between each customer. They'd have to employees would have to do, like, health checks every day. And then they could optionally wear gloves and masks, but it's not required under their plan. But they are. This is something that they're sending out to members right now, kind of gearing up for the seat reopening whenever that happens.
Democrats called out this hearing because of the people it didn't include. Who did they want to hear from?
There were no public health professionals at the hearing. So, you know, people who study pandemics or outbreaks or anything like that, you didn't hear from them at this hearing. And so that was criticism from Democrats. Also, kind of the recurring criticism you heard from them is that if you open the state up regionally and you have restrictions in some counties, like Milwaukee, for example, but not in other more rural counties, that, you know, people and the virus not going to respect those county lines, and that people will travel, the virus will travel, and, you know, you can't close the state down regionally is kind of their point of view on all this.
Republicans officially asked the state Supreme Court to reject the extension of the Safer at Home order, which goes until May 26th. More recently, the Evers administration wants the court to reject that Republican motion. What's the status of these legal actions right now?
I think the status as we are talking right now is that the court could kind of weigh in at any moment on officially whether it's going to take the case, because that's the first thing that it has to decide is whether or not it's going to hear this original action for a case that didn't wind its way through the court system the way cases normally do. And then, you know, the bigger question is, are they going to agree with Republicans? Are they going to strike down the stay-at-home order? And if so, what kind of a timeline are they going to put on it? Because the Republicans asked them to strike it down, but then issue a six-day stay, essentially freezing things as they are right now and giving the governor and the legislature 6 days to craft some kind of a replacement. The thing is, they want the governor's office to do that through the administrative rulemaking process. And that takes a long time normally. The governor's office says there's no way you could craft new rules in 6 days if you follow the law. And so if that's the case, it may be the case that Republicans and the governor cannot, you know, just by law come up with some kind of a compromise in 6 days. It might also be the case that they're so far apart on whether to do this statewide or regionally that they don't come up with a compromise, and it falls to local governments to come up with their own restrictions county by county.
Sean, we know the story is changing rapidly, and I'm sure we'll check back with you when we know more. Thank you so much for giving us an update today.
Thanks, Keely.
Sean Johnson is WPR's Capital Bureau Chief, and we caught up on the competing ideas for reopening Wisconsin's economy and the challenge to Governor Evers' extension of the Safer at Home order here in Wisconsin. Coming up, we're talking with a doctor about skin cancer and how we can protect ourselves when we're out in the sun. Stay with us here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Keely Boltina. Coming up, disinformation about a fake nationwide lockdown circulated last month, and now U.S. officials think China was involved in spreading it. We're talking to an expert on disinformation about the new tactic of sending disinformation directly to Americans via text. Now, according to the American Academy of Dermatology, skin cancer is the most common kind of cancer in the U.S. One in five Americans develops it in their lifetime, but it can also be highly curable, provided it's caught early. The Sun is joining us more now that it's May and it's Skin Cancer Awareness Month, so we're talking about how to protect ourselves, how to spot potential skin cancer, and the treatment options available to patients. Kurt Edel is the Cancer Center Director at Gunderson Health System in La Crosse. Dr. Edel, good to have you back on the show.
Hey, thank you for having me today.
We might see some 70-degree days in parts of Wisconsin this weekend, but it's early spring. I mean, how cautious do we need to be in the spring sun?
Yes. So, yes, it looks like a great weekend coming up. And just to be clear, when we're talking about skin cancer, and the intro there was that it is the most common kind of cancer. When we really look at skin cancer as a whole, we're looking at basically three types of cancer. We're looking at squamous cell, basal cell, and melanoma. But it's really melanoma. That's the one that we're really worried about, or the one that we're really concerned about protecting us from. And spring and summer are really the sort of the high intensity times of the year when we're really talking about protecting ourselves.
But we think, oh, well, it's early. You know, summertime certainly is a time I have to worry about it, but I can just go work in the yard in May and I should be fine. It sounds like we should take some precautions.
Yes, we should. Yes, we should. And that really is sun exposures, particularly between the hours of 10 and 4, is really when the sun intensity is greatest. And I'm told that when you're standing outside, if your shadow is cast shorter than yourself, those are the times that are most intense. So that's a sort of a quick and easy way to think about being exposed, if you will.
That's an interesting little shorthand way to think, oh, goodness, I should probably add a layer or put on some sunscreen. Sometimes sunburn just kind of, you might think, well, it's just a sunburn, right? Like, it's uncomfortable, but it'll go away in a few days. But there are long-term risks to sun exposure. Talk about some of those.
Yeah, so, you know, again, I'm a medical oncologist, so I'm kind of the doctor that you see after you've developed melanoma. And what we're really trying to say is, how can we prevent it in the first place? And certainly it has everything to do with the amount of time that you spend in the sun and degrees of sunburns per se. So we're trying to prevent that right from the get-go. We do know that patients who develop a severe sunburn, repeated sunburns, or have long-term exposure in the sun are going to be the patients who are most susceptible to developing a melanoma.
Dr. Kurt Edel is the Cancer Center Director at Gunderson Health System in La Crosse, and we're talking about how to take care of our skin as the sun comes out and we spend more time outside. And we are taking your calls at 800-642-1234 if you have a question about skin or sunscreen or how to make sure that you and your family stay safe when enjoying the new warmer weather. Give us a call at 800-642-1234, and we'll talk about it here on the Ideas Network. Dr. Edel, you've mentioned melanoma. It's the most serious type of skin cancer. Why is that?
One, because it's the most aggressive. Many of the other types of skin cancer, squamous and basal, which are more common, are often cancers that don't necessarily spread to other parts of the body as rapidly, as quickly, or as, for lack of a better term, sneakily, if you will, like melanoma can. Melanoma is a really kind of a strange kind of cancer in that even early stage disease can linger and turn around and spread to other parts of the body long after it was initially caught. So, and it can be very aggressive type of a cancer.
And our skin is the largest organ in our body. I mean, there's so much of it. So how do we effectively monitor that so that we do try to catch something early if we find a problem?
Well, first off is just doing routine skin checks. And if you have a dermatologist, great, more power to you. If you don't have a dermatologist, I like the ABCDE rule, looking at moles, A being asymmetry, that is, does one mole look completely different than another? B being border, is there an irregular border to a mole? C being color, that is it uniform or not? Generally not being uniform is more concerning. D being diameter, is it greater than 6 millimeters? That's about the size of a pencil eraser. And E being evolving, is it changing or evolving in size, in shape, or color? That's a sort of a quick and easy way to think about that.
What happens when you fit one or more of those categories with a spot on your skin? Where do we take that information?
You take that to your primary care doctor, yes, because that's where it really starts, because having someone experienced looking at moles and being able to say, aha, that looks like something different, we just need to get a biopsy to make sure we're not dealing with something that could be more serious.
You know, COVID-19 is coming up in almost all of our discussions, and I see it here where you might think, okay, this doesn't really look right on my skin, but gosh, I don't want to go to a clinic right now. I don't want to walk in. What are our options if we do find something concerning other than, well, wait 6 months and see where we are?
Well, we're pretty tech savvy these days, and just taking a picture of it right now. So many healthcare systems can do video or virtual visits, taking a picture of it, either storing it, and then going into your doctor in a month from now, taking another picture to see if there's any evolving component to it. Many clinics right now are starting to relax some of the restrictions, and many clinics are seeing patients, and good protection going into the clinic, you know, hand washing, face mask, you know, by and large, that should be a safe environment. I know that it's, you know, everything's COVID these days and we're very concerned, but for evolving moles, that is something that that deserves, especially if there's something that's changing rapidly, that's something that's worthy of seeing your provider for.
The American Academy of Dermatology says about 3/4 of people say sun protection is important to do daily, but only about 40 of us say we actually do it regularly.
Yes.
Where's the gap here? Why do we acknowledge that it's important and then not really follow through?
It takes some effort. You know, you have to go in the you know, the storage, you know, the bathroom you know, kitchen cupboard or bathroom cupboard or wherever you store your sunscreen. You have to pull it out. You have to figure, oh, is this expired? Is it not? You're looking at the SPF on it. You're running around trying to lather up the kids who don't want to do this, and they're running outside. So it takes some effort for most of us. And frankly, it's just easier to slap on a T-shirt and run outside.
Yeah, well, and that is the deal. What if we have sleeves or hats, and or we've put some sunscreen on? Do we have to still do that when it's cloudy or hazy?
Yes. So the best protection is clothing. The best protection is clothing, and wide rim hats, long sleeve shirts or shirts, and then using sun protection factor. I think most people don't realize that, you know, when you look at the sunscreen, SPF 30 is actually quite adequate for most of us.
It blocks something like more than 90% of the rays that are harmful.
Exactly. Yeah. So, an SPF 30 will filter out 97% of the UV rays, whereas SPF 50 does 97 and SPF 100 does 99. So going up in that number doesn't mean like it's twice as protective per se.
But we do have to reapply it, which is another barrier.
Mm-hmm. Every two hours is best. And that's, you know, that's and where it really makes a difference is when you have high UV days, you know, that days when the sun is really quite hot and intense, and you're outside for prolonged periods of time, like, you know, all day at the beach or at the swimming pool. Should we ever do that again this summer?
Right. That aspect of it, too. But just to be clear, these precautions, important, smart, but we can still have fun outside.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, this is, we just got to monitor risk. And doing that is really doesn't take that much effort for most of us. It's just consciously doing it.
All right. Dr. Edel, thank you so much for making time for us today.
Oh, hey, thank you very much for your time.
Dr. Kurt Edel is the Cancer Center Director at Gunderson Health System in La Crosse, and we talked with him about how we can protect ourselves from the sun's harmful rays, especially as we are now in May and we are seeing more sunshine and the temperatures warm up. This is Central Time. You can re-listen to anything you might have missed if you miss a snippet by going online to WPR.org/Central Time. As the days blur together while we stay closer to home, some of us are busting the boredom with games. We had a conversation about it on Central Time yesterday with great tips and options for playing with everybody at your house or by yourself or across the country. More suggestions are rolling in on Facebook. Eric recommends Gloomhaven. Andrew drops the suggestion of playing pandemic. Doug says the library is running a game of Camel Up using social media. And so many votes for Settlers of Catan. Goodness, from Barbara and Margaret. And Mary, who says it's the only game worth playing. Tomorrow, 2 p.m. short, I'm Sharp. I'm joining 8 kids from 3 different households for a video chat version of Pictionary. Long distance bingo is also on the docket at some point. These are either two of the smartest ideas my parent friends have had, or two of the most horrifying. I guess either way, we've got another story to add to the list when we look back at this time and muse. Remember when? And Jerry posted a list of games for us, too. Then Jerry says, but I do miss the game group meeting in person. I'm with you, Jerry. People are part of the fun, sometimes most of the fun. Keep playing and keep those spirits up and share your favorite games or tips to make them work in our current world by visiting the Ideas Network Facebook page. I'm Keely Boltina. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.